and welcome to Forex Overland, the Adventure Travel Inspiration Podcast. My name is Andrew St. Pierre White. This podcast is brought to you by BF Goodrich Tires. Today, I'm going to play for you back one of my recordings that I did while on one of my trips, when I spoke about my relationship with the Toyota company. The story today is about my relationship with the Toyota Motor Company. Now, When I started, I was a real fanboy of Land Rovers, absolutely loved Land Rovers, and nothing was better than Land Rover. And then I realized, becoming a motoring journalist, that I couldn't be a fanboy and be realistic, because fanboys tend to, it's this thing that I call blind brand loyalty. And I think it's actually a bad thing, because if you're so wrapped up in a particular brand, then you actually miss good stuff coming from another brand just because it's got the wrong label on the bonnet or label in front of the camera or whatever it could mean. I see it so often in cameras, and you know, I'm Canon. Well, just because Sony has just brought out a camera that is just absolutely awesome, or Nikon has brought out the D850, which is, oh man, you don't see it, not because it's not amazing, it's just because it's got the wrong label on the front of it. And I can't understand that. However, I say that knowing that many years ago, I was one of those people. If it wasn't Land Rover, it was, I would stick my nose up at anything, you know, derisive manager, anything that wasn't Land Rover. Oh, just a Toyota, you know, some rubbish Toyota. Well, the fact is that doing that takes away from, you know, Toyota was making some four-wheel drive vehicles that were really good. And now, of course, they make four-wheel drive vehicles that are outstanding. And Land Rover has changed tack. They're not doing what they used to do. And Toyota, etc. So, as a motoring journalist, it was very important to be for me to be even-handed when it came to reporting on different vehicles, not being brand biased. And there was a period of time where Toyota actually approached me and said, we'd like to give you one of our cars. I was driving Land Rovers. I had published a book. I was making a mark in the industry. And Toyota stood up and took notice and said, you know, we need to get him behind the wheel of one of our vehicles because he might change his mind. That happened at the same time as me actually changing my attitude to vehicles. And that story started in, I can't remember. But the presentation that I recorded while on the Canning Stock Route in 2017, it's now early 2018, I recollected those times. I think I got most of the times, the dates right, in my relationship with Toyota, which basically spanned from about 1998-ish to 2012. But this story is a good one. It was a very positive positive experience for me. I hope you enjoy it. Just before I left on my first overland expedition through Australia, which was the Canning Stock Route, which was July this year, I did a quick calculation on a calculator on my computer. And I worked out that I have been driving off-road vehicles for 35 years. And that doesn't include the time that I drove with my father through bits of Africa. It's from the time I got my own vehicle and started doing it myself. And of course, those of you who know my work will know my first vehicle, my first love, was a Range Rover Classic. And I've often said if I'd bought a vehicle that was Japanese, maybe a Toyota Hilux, my life would have been made a lot easier and a lot less interesting. And I don't think I would have had the passion for it that I do now, had I driven a less interesting vehicle. And I call them less interesting because, well, we all know that Land Rovers, particularly the early ones, I don't think this is the case anymore, but lots and lots of character and great performers in so many ways. And that's what I was kind of born with, because my father had one and that was my start in this industry. But Toyota came along. I got my first vehicle in 1982 and only started doing this kind of thing professionally
in about 1994-5. My website was launched in 1996. And in 1998, Toyota South Africa contacted me and offered me a long-term loan vehicle. I'd become reasonably well known in South Africa for my work, and I'd published some books, and I was starting to do regular magazine articles. And they approached me, actually, the launch of the Land Cruiser Prado 90, which was the first generation Prado to be seen in South Africa, but the second generation overall. And called the Colorado in the United Kingdom. Going from Land Rover to Toyota was a big step for me, but it was—I mean—it was a wonderful opportunity for me because it was an opportunity. It was recognition that what I was doing was valuable by a motor manufacturer. This was amazing, and I jumped at it. I thought the Prado was quite good. I'd driven it on some off-road tracks, and I'd been to some events with Toyota themselves, and it was an impressive vehicle. It really worked well, and I took it. And you know, often we as four-wheel drivers, if we're brand loyal, and I was enormously brand loyal to Land Rover at the time, we tend to snub our noses at it's not one of us kind of thing, and that's very, very common. And particularly with Land Rover people, we all do it. Land Rover people, in myself included, kind of look down on other vehicles. Given the GX model, which was the basic model, Land Cruiser 90 had the 3-litre turbo diesel motor that the KZTE engine. And it was, by comparison to my Land Rover Defender, powerful. It carried a load really quite well for an SUV. Was really comfortable compared to my Defender. It was immensely practical and comfortable, and I really liked it. I really did, and I was impressed by this vehicle, so much so that I was starting my family and I was building a house. I thought, I'm going to invest in this full time. I'm actually going to sell my Land Rover. And I did. And so my relationship with Toyota began then. And it began with that vehicle. And I have some stories to tell. It still is a very positive relationship. I don't have a relationship with Toyota at the moment, and haven't had for the last 3 or 4 years, and bought this myself. My only relationship with Toyota now is a relationship with my local dealer that has been doing me a few favors here and there, and service great, excellent. That's as far as it goes for now. But back then, it was a very, very serious and meaningful part of my business. Sold a Land Rover, started to drive my loan Toyota, and kept it for a year. While I had it, they needed it for something, and I had to give it back to them for 2 weeks or something, right at the point. I don't know why. I vaguely remember, but I remember it was during that period, and I needed to do a trip. I wanted to do a trip to Zambia and Botswana, and they didn't have one, and it was big panic. Oh dear, we'll find one for you. And they found one belonging to a chap called Von Krauser, who was running the Continental Off-Road Academy in South Africa at that time. And while Von and I got on reasonably well, I wasn't impressed with the school, because I thought a lot of the techniques they were teaching were very poor, and some of them were absolutely wrong. But nevertheless, they had a good, tight-knit relationship with Toyota as well. And I was loaned Von Krauser's Land Cruiser Prado. He also had a Prado on loan, a press Prado on loan. And I remember packing it up and leaving Johannesburg. We had to have a roof rack fitted because mine had a roof rack, and it was all of this big thing to get it ready, and left Johannesburg, and it broke down. And we got about 3-4 hours north of Johannesburg and went into limp mode. And I crawled into the service station at a town then called Pietersburg, and it hadn't been serviced since its first service at 5,000 kilometers. Hadn't been serviced in 22,000 kilometers. And that's why it broke down. Fuel system was blocked. And then did an amazing trip through Botswana and parts of southern Zambia. And that was the vehicle, those of you who know my videos, where my friend Jacques and I got stuck on the salt pan and where we nearly died. Well, let's put it this way. We got so badly stuck, I just didn't even film it. It was one of the few times I've been off-road where I've been scared for my life, and I've had to be very, very cool-headed about. We got stuck. It was incredibly hot. We were miles from anywhere. We were seriously bogged down on a salt pan. It was our last day. We only had 15 liters of water in the vehicle left because it was our last day. We were actually on our way home. We hadn't replenished our water. Long story short, we got away with it through skillful and very purposeful, methodical process of getting ourselves out of trouble, which we did. And we discovered at that time that also that the vehicle had been driven through a lot of very tall grass, and grass had collected in the radiator, which we hadn't noticed until the vehicle was working very, very hard on the muddy surface of the salt flat, because the temperature just screamed up. And we realized that it looked okay, but between the air conditioning evaporator, and the car's own vehicle engine cooling radiator, there was just a mass of grass, and we had to try and clean that out. And we had an amazing trip. When I got back, I was given my Prado back, which was well looked after. And then something happened that was quite interesting. I was at a place called Stony Ridge Off-Road Academy. And my good mate, John Rich, is one of the best, well, certainly the best off-road instructor I've ever worked with. And I decided to try, let me see if I can, you know, bring in guests to, and I'll kind of be involved with John teaching you off-road driving skills. And we had about six or seven other vehicles there. And I realized at that time I wasn't terribly good at it. I was a little bit impatient, and where John is supremely patient. And he's just a very, very good instructor. But anyway, we had a good weekend. And there was a very, very deep water crossing, and I was demonstrating a water crossing. I took a bad line through the water, and the water just suddenly broke over the bonnet and the engine stalled. And I had never been in this situation before. And I remember reaching for the keys to restart the motor, and I thought, no, hold on a minute. Whoa, 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 whoa. Stop, 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 stop. Stop. Bad idea. Really, really bad idea. And I shouted to John, the water was filling up, and I climbed out, and the car was full of water. And we pulled it out. And then I was taught something really interesting that I didn't know. John taught it me. John ran this off-road driving school, but he was also a diesel mechanic, mechanically very sussed. And he said, no, this is the way we have to sort this out. Firstly, we find out if the engine has ingested water. Out comes the air filter. If it's wet, the answer is yes, it has. Okay, you must make that assumption. If the water has got as far as the air cleaner, it had. We then jacked up one back wheel, put it in fifth gear, rotated that wheel with our hands after removing the glow plugs. And water was, as the engine was turned over by our hands on the rear wheel, it rotated the engine, and all of the water was squirted out all of the glow plugs. Glow plugs are easier to remove than injectors. And we made sure that it was clear. We cleaned out and were very thorough in terms of the inlet manifold, making sure there was no more water. And with the air cleaner out to dry, we started the engine, and it started first tick. And I was taught that by John. And I wrote about it in a magazine article that I was writing. At the time, I was writing for Leisure Wheels magazine. And there's more about Leisure Wheels magazine in my story about my relationship with Mitsubishi. And I wrote about it. And I also wrote about it in my own newsletter. I had what's known as the 4x Forum, which was my website, which later became 4x Overland or 4x Overland. I wrote about it, and my mate at Toyota, he was the guy that actually, at Toyota Marketing, he ran Toyota Marketing at that time, his name, by the name of Roger Houghton. And he was my boss at Toyota, as it were, and at one of the Toyota functions, he said, "I read that article, so you drowned my vehicle, eh?" And I was, I must say, looking at it, I was very, yes, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. And he said, no, you don't need to apologize. It was a fantastic article. What a great article that was. Really? So it was, I really thought I was in trouble. No, the opposite. That kind of cemented my relationship with Toyota, because from then we were publishing a Trails book. And we did a version for Toyota South Africa, and we printed 5,000 of them. And we also did the launch of the Land Cruiser 100. I went on the actual press launch, and I drove with a rally driver called Oppy Reinecker, and he was the kind of Toyota's host. Every vehicle on a typical press fleet, you'll go out and you'll have somebody, normally two journos, and then a third person that'll be a representative from the manufacturer with you in the vehicle. That is normal and quite common. And this was Oppy Reinecker, the rally driver, and he taught me about left foot braking, not off-road. I'd been doing left foot braking off-road for a while, but he taught me about left foot braking on tar road driving. That was really interesting. And we had a fantastic, fantastic day. And we published a book for Toyota in part of their big press release. And I don't remember how many were printed, but it was several thousand, of a book which was a combination of the Trails book that Gunn and I co-wrote and my 4x4 guidebook. And we kind of combined the two, took out all of the photographs that weren't Toyotas, and compiled this book for them. And so that was a commission. And it's a lovely book if you're a Toyota fan. And of course had the press pictures of the Land Cruiser 100. Then they called it the VX. It was the 4.2 multi-valve diesel engine in what they called the VX. And they also had the V8, but that actually only came a little later. And they had the 105, which had the 4.2 normally aspirated. Two valve per cylinder engine that we know, the 1HZ, that I know very, very well. And those vehicles were launched at that time. Then Roger Houghton left, and my relationship with Toyota was never quite as strong as again. There were a number of different people that took over from him. I think I can think of three, and none of them lasted more than about a year and a half, 2 years. And when the troop carrier was launched in South Africa was 2011. Up to that point, they had not sold them in South Africa at all. And I had done this with the 76, because let's rewind just a little bit here. The Land Cruisers that I had purchased, because of our relationship, I thought, let me buy a Land Cruiser for myself. Because this relationship is very solid. I like the trucks, I like the vehicles. They're certainly good performers. Let me go the whole hog and actually let go of Land Rovers and go Toyotas. And that was, I suppose, the main reason why I moved from Land Rover to Toyota. It was a financial one, it was an economic business one. And I bought a Land Cruiser 79. It had a 1HZ engine. But the old style front and the old style dashboard, and it was I bought a pickup, two-door pickup, the four-door 79 or four-door Land Cruiser pickup Ute was not available at the time, but I had it converted into a four-door, so it was now a four-door Ute. And there was a company in South Africa called Miano and Son doing conversions remarkably similar to what Toyota now do. Really very, very similar in shape, design, very, very similar. And they did a good job, but I didn't like the vehicle because it was just so grossly underpowered and didn't keep it for particularly long. Then I sold that, I then got a, you see, I was lucky because of my relationship with Toyota. I would, as soon as a new vehicle was launched, or even just a press fleet, I would go to Roger and say, can I have one of your press vehicles? And I'd get it at a really good price, not cheap, but a very advantageous price. But they were press vehicles, and press vehicles were often a bit abused. The press don't look after four-wheel drive vehicles. They're actually notorious for damaging four-wheel drive press fleet vehicles. But I got the pickup I didn't get. I bought that new, but they gave me an extremely good price through one of their own fleet dealership system. I bought a 105 that I got a really good price too. It was brand new, but it had the 4.5 petrol engine in it. And it was a wonderful vehicle. I still love the 105, but that vehicle was so thirsty. So, okay, just a quick little anecdote of how thirsty that vehicle was. I did everything I possibly could to improve its fuel consumption. And one of the things I did was I chipped it, and I added a, I had the head worked with all of the valves. That had a four valve per cylinder engine, all of the hulls ground and the inlet manifold ground, and the whole head worked. So this thing really pushed power, pushed a lot of power. And I did a whole, and I had exhaust, and this was to improve fuel consumption. Made no difference. I barely measured 0.5% difference, if there was a difference. In fact, it was so low I couldn't even state that it was actually improving it. On a trip from my hometown in Cape Town to a place called George, which is east, 6 hours, I left at 3 a.m. for a conference, for a big off-road conference. I'm not a fast driver. I'm just not a fast driver. I generally drive, I'm happy with the speed limit. I just am. But this particular occasion, late at night, I burned it. And I was sitting at 140. I suppose I might have hit 170 on the clock once or twice, but I was sitting at a good 140, 150, 160 the whole way, mountainous roads. And this engine just performed. And I got 15.6 liters per 100 kilometers. The best ever fuel consumption I got with that vehicle. When I turned it around, I stayed there then one night, the next following day, I went back to Cape Town, 6 hours. There was what they call in Cape Town as the southeaster blowing, the southeaster, prevailing southeaster wind. I had a tailwind blowing me, but it was now ordinary, you know, Sunday afternoon, and I drove at the speed limit and 18.2 liters per 100 kilometers. It doesn't make any sense. I know it doesn't make any sense, but that's what happened. So now that was my, so then I sold my petrol 105 and bought a 76, also with a 4.2, the one HZ engine. A little bit underpowered, but it was a lighter vehicle, and I quite enjoyed that vehicle. But then I thought, you know, I just loved the 105. I wasn't in love with the 76, so I actually bought a used 105 diesel. And that vehicle also, one HZ engine, and I loved that vehicle. And I did so many major trips in it. I did my searching for the Okavango, my longest ever expedition. And what a fantastic truck that is. I absolutely love it. It's a little bit on the heavy side, but just comfortable and practical. And I sold it. I think I had it for about 4 years. And I sold it after I got my first troop carrier. And it was a reluctant sale, but the troop carrier was such a big project. And that happened in 2011. And again, I went back to Toyota and I said, you've got the troop carrier, you're launching the troop carrier. Can I have one of your press vehicles? And he said, okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We've got two press vehicles. We're going to organize you one of them. And I said, but what I want to do is I want to organize the following deal. I want to keep it for one year. And then I'll buy it from you, less depreciation. And I worked out costs and everything, and I reckon I'd get it at a good deal. And he said yes. So having said yes, plans were put in place. I was going to get me a Troopy, but I knew that this build, this was going to be more than just get me getting a vehicle and then getting some accessories and bolting it onto it and making it into an overland vehicle. This was going to be something very, very special. And the chap that was then running marketing at he was a difficult guy to get on with, and I think that I don't want to say negative things, but I think he found the job a bit of a challenge. Where Roger was just this natural person, just things happened. With this other chap, it was more of a challenge, and it was more of a challenge for me to, you know, kind of, well, you said this, you know, we've got it in writing, you know, because it was a long time before between that and actually getting given the vehicle. And I remember there was a big motoring show in Nasrec, which is a big expo center south of Johannesburg. And I would get the vehicle after that. So I actually went to the Nasrec showgrounds, and there were no Troopies there at all. And I thought, what's going on here? I was kind of, my heart sank. Well, I was supposed to get the one at the showground, and there wasn't one at the showground. And what it was, was that my one actually had been used as the photography vehicle, the vehicle that was being used for all the press shoots. And apparently that's why it wasn't there, but they had a whole lot of other Toyotas there. But anyway, that's what happened. And eventually I got my vehicle, and I was very relieved, because there were many times where I thought, oh, this is just not going to happen. So when it did happen, oh, wow. And then my challenge was, and this has got less to do with my relationship with Toyota than my relationship now with other people that I depended upon for building the troop carrier. That process was quite new to me, because I actually started a business in South Africa that I would actually consult for people and build vehicles for clients. And it turned out I wasn't terribly good at it. Not that I didn't struggle building the vehicles. We built some beauties. But I had a partner join me, and that didn't work out, because he just, it was one of these, he just basically took over. And I wanted to do it this way because of my experience and my knowledge, and, you know, no, we do it this way. And so I thought, well, what am I doing here? What is it all about? This is one of the reasons why it failed, because I wanted to do it a certain way. And I, you know, and it had started with, I want to build the ultimate Land Cruiser camper, overland camper. Just such a beauty, such a brilliant, brilliant vehicle. And I came up with the idea of the lifting roof. I came up with the internal bed. And this was all something that I'd worked on. And I didn't realize that they were doing this in Germany. I hadn't seen any pictures. And in the middle of this, somebody said to me, have you seen the ones in Germany? I said, why? Are they doing it in Germany? Yeah, they've been doing it for years in Germany. Do you want to see the pictures? And I said, no. No, I do not want to see the pictures. Please don't show me the pictures. This is what I want, because this is going to be amazing. And I think I was actually right, because I still think the Alucab Hercules is better than anything made in Germany in terms of practicality, and just, it is. It's the best I've seen anywhere. I'm not talking about the interior designs and things like that, but just the mechanism and system for raising the roof and everything, it is as good, if not better, than anything I've seen by any manufacturer anywhere. And I don't think I'm saying that just because I helped design it. I just think it is. Anyway, and my idea was to have this incredible, incredible truck. And my business partner just took the wind out of my sails. And I thought, oh, you know, I thought I was going to enjoy this process of innovative and interesting and dealing with clients and finding out what they want. You know, what do you want to do with your vehicles? What kind of trips do you do? The kind of load do you want to carry? The distance, blah, 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 you know, and then building these vehicles. And I had enormous trouble with some of the equipment retailers in South Africa that I wanted to use some of their products. And some of them said to me, well, you take everything from us or you take nothing. And then I said, well, that's not the point of this project. The project is that I can cherry pick the best. And I'm not linked to any specific manufacturer or brand. That's the point. Because if you go into this shop, they'll sell you this brand. This shop, that brand. This shop, that. It's exactly the same in Australia. And so, you know, you as the buyer need to actually go to the different places and pick and choose. And a lot of people do. They get a lot of information from all over the place and they do that. But I wanted to be able to do that and say, my experience with this particular vehicle, these springs and these shocks and this bull bar, and this winch and this thing and that shower and all of these different things. And I pushed through. And eventually my business partner and I we split up. And I remember when the troop carrier, it's the one that I built in South Africa from 2011, 12, 13, and in 2014, took it to the UK, and it was actually sold in the UK in 2015. That vehicle, I remember with great, great pride and joy. It was the big getaway show. The getaway show is the big over, it's a 4x4 travel show held Johannesburg at the beginning of every September. And my vehicle was going to be on show. I had partnered up with a big retail, camping retail company, and my vehicle was going to be on show. And I remember, and it was the first one of its kind. And I remember as I reversed it into this spot under the lights, there were four or five of these guys, including my ex-business partner, standing there, jaws agape. They couldn't believe what they were looking at. The people that I built it with, and Alucab is one of the major ones that I built that worked with me on the truck, they didn't do that. They said, what have you got in mind? And they'll say, well, do it like that. I remember them talking about the roof. We'll put it like this. And then they said to me, we can take the roof right to the front. You can? Yes, there's no reason why we can't. Really? Because I hadn't drawn it like that. You know? And I remember the bed thing that comes down, saying to them, well, the pillows are going to fall down, which is a problem with a lot of the German ones. The pillows are going to fall down. So we'll just put another latch in there, which they did. They subsequently made it a bit wider from my prototype, and they've made some tweaks. But that's, and I tell you, when I looked at those people and I shook their hands as if it was nothing between us, you know, and they shook my hand and turned around and walked off. And I remember looking at the look on their faces, they could not believe it. This vehicle was gorgeous. I was told by three individual people at the show that this was the most impressive vehicle on show. Okay, and I guess in a way it was, because it was different, it was new, it was the first time in South Africa. It was a great sense of accomplishment to me personally that I had built this truck. And subsequently, I built a few trailers for that. I never built another troop carrier for a client, but I know of several people that actually, there's Bushlaw campers came to see my vehicle and immediately ordered three or four. I know several people that actually were, my vehicle was parked at a Toyota dealership down in Cape Town for a while, and people actually just saw it in the window and looked at it and went in and ordered. And so it was a win-win-win situation across the board. Until, of course, now, as I said earlier, I don't talk to Toyota at all. I have no relationship with them at all, even the people in South Africa. I have to mention, though, that the final bit of relationship in South Africa was finally closed when they, after not 1 year, but 3 years, there were changing people and this and, can you keep it for another year? Sure, I can keep it for another year. I don't have to pay for it for another year and the depreciation. I've still got full use of it. And I'd done the conversion and everything. So that was rigged. And then a third year, yes, sir, I don't mind at all. So right at the end, when I went to Johannesburg to finally settle up, I went to see the people there and they said to me, thank you very, very much for what you've done. We've loved the work you've done. And in fact, they didn't hand me the keys. I remember clearly now. They said, we've looked for the spare keys and there aren't any. I said, oh, that's a pertinent point. And she said, no, that's actually not unusual. I'll tell you why. Yours was the first of two to enter the country. They're used for homologation and photography purposes, and they normally don't come with second keys and a service book. Very common. So now we know it's yours. And they said, no payment. And I like to tell people about that because at the time I was living in England and things were quite tough, and that vindication that my work was valuable to Toyota, and that was wonderful. And in fact, something on a personal note here, it was that vehicle that I had in the UK that enabled me to come to Australia, because I sold it for quite a lot of money. And I had made all those programs, all those videos, enjoyed the vehicle thoroughly, and learned an enormous amount about troop carriers and what they're all about and this conversion. And I've now replaced it with a brand new one. So they're happy and I am ecstatic with my new Toyota. This is my, let's go through, 79, 105, 76, 105 troop carrier. This is my sixth Toyota, sixth Toyota Land Cruiser. Breakdowns, I have had, I've lost a fan belt on my 1HZ 105. I lost fan belts on three separate occasions. I used to carry spares. And I found out that, in fact, the only reason why that happened was the genuine Toyota fan belt was not genuine at all. Bought from a Toyota dealership. It wasn't. I actually took it broken. And the shape was wrong, so it generates a huge amount of heat because the shape is wrong. Okay, how about that? That was interesting. And I had some timing problems on my 1HZ, my 76. And I had a immobilizer failure on my 105 1HZ. And to conclude the story about my relationship with Toyota, I'm going to tell you about that breakdown. I remember it was 4 days before my epic Finding the Okavango trip. I went to, took my daughter to her to stables, dropped her off, went in to start the car, and the car wouldn't start. It just would go, nice healthy battery, healthy starter motor, no, didn't fire. Which with a diesel engine, that means no fuel. If it's cranking well and not firing, it has to be fuel. There's nothing else. Why wouldn't it have fuel? Broken fuel pump. Why would the they don't break. I mean, 1HZ oil fuel pumps, mechanical fuel pump. They're so reliable, these things. Just, they really go on forever. Immobilizer. Clicked the immobilizer on, off, and eventually got it to start. Went back home, wouldn't start again. Playing. Next day, tried to get it, got it to start. Drove it to the my local Toyota dealership. Stopped it there, called the mechanic over and said, okay, is that an immobilizer? He said, yes, Mr. White, it's an immobilizer. Well, let's see what we can do. Because I knew one of the people there quite well, and he was very helpful. And he said, don't worry, Mr. White, we're going to help you out right now. Because generally speaking, the service, it's pretty good, I suppose. I'd certainly seen quite good. Quite. This is about to ruin it. Went into the workshop. Yes, Mr. White. We'll sort you out now. We're just gonna. And the bonnet was open, and they were walking around it, looking inside, poking around. Now I know this engine bay. Engine. What are you looking for? ECU plug. I said, I beg your pardon. We're looking for the ECU plug so we can put in the diagnostics. Yeah, but it's a 1HZ. Yes, Mr. White, don't worry. You sit there. And now they're starting to be condescending. So I eventually, an hour later, just got to find the ECU and then we'll do a diagnostic. Doesn't have an ECU. Eventually, I called the workshop. I said, bring the workshop manual over here. And I remember face to face. And I said to him, I looked at him in the eye and I said, please, please, please listen to me. Listen to the words I say. I know for a fact the vehicle does not have an ECU. It doesn't have one. And I remember, so please stop looking for it. He said, yes, Mr. White, one moment, please. He went out, came back and said, we're terribly sorry, you're right, it doesn't have an ECU. That took an hour. I had phoned my wife and said, Gwynnie, please can you bring me my toolbox? She had arrived about soon after the altercation with the service manager. I then walked into where my vehicle was and opened the bonnet. One of the Mackies there had given me a lead light, and I had now traced the wire to the immobilizer, and I was figuring out how to remove the immobilizer because I had made that deduction that it had to be the immobilizer. A voice behind me as I'm lying over the engine. Excuse me. Yes. Can you tell me what you're doing? And I looked at him and I said, are you an auto electrician? He said, uh-huh. They just phoned me and they said, we've got a customer going mad. I said, did you tell them it doesn't have an ECU? Again, yeah. They had phoned him. The Toyota dealer had phoned the auto electrician to find out if this thing had an ECU. And then they'd said, please come, we've got a customer going mad in the workshop. I said, it cranks, good starter motor, no firing, okay? Pump, immobilizer, it can't be anything else, am I right? He says, yes. I said, do these things' pumps break? He said, not very often. I said, do the immobilizers break? He said, every now and again. And I jumped off the stool and he climbed in there and I said, have you replaced one of these? Have you sorted one of these signs before? And he said, yes, I have. And climbed in within 15 minutes. He had the immobilizer out and we ran a jury wire. So now the vehicle had no transponder immobilized at all. We bypassed it. And I did my trip. And I was actually very grateful because imagine if that happened a week later, I would have been absolutely... No, I wouldn't have been completely, because I knew what it was. But I would have had to do a major breakdown in the middle of Angola, which wouldn't have been fun. So that's my relationship with Toyota, and I thank you for watching. I hope it hasn't been a little bit too long-winded, but I still very much a Land Cruiser man. Not necessarily a Toyota. They make good cars, but I think the Land Cruisers are special, and I particularly like the fact that Toyota are making vehicles suitable for proper rugged off-road extended travel overland trips. And not a lot of manufacturers are still doing that. And for that, I'm very grateful.